You're listening to the Changing the World Summit, where inspiring leaders from around the world share their secrets on having more impact in these times of change, and where you can participate in our project to remove over 1 million plastic bottles from the environment while providing impoverished entrepreneurs with an opportunity to thrive. I'm your host, Julia Steggy, with the pleasure of interviewing changemakers willing to share their secrets for having more impact. Listen to the entire interview series and make your donations to our plastics removal program at www.changingtheworldsummit.com.
Welcome to Changing the World Summit. I'm Julia Steggy, your host, and today I have Sean Frankson from Plastic Bank. Sean is the co-founder of Plastic Bank, a social enterprise that makes plastic waste a currency to stop ocean plastic while reducing global poverty. Plastic Bank provides a universal income for the world's poor that is earned through social plastic recycling programs. Sean is a digital strategist and proudly empowers others to create a life of purpose. He is the project lead on a game-changing blockchain recycling platform and created the brand strategies to introduce social plastic to the world, resulting in over 300 media features and a multi-million person movement. Plastic Bank is now enrolling the word to contribute while working with some of the largest organizations on the planet to help stop ocean plastic. Sean's ability to strategize has taken him all over the world. He was named an Ashoka Emerging Innovator, an IBM Champion, and along with David Katz, received the Sustainia Community Award at COP21 and then a United Nations Momentum for Change Award at COP23. Sean is a social good spokesman and performed a 2017 TEDx talk on saving the planet through responsible consumerism. He's made appearances in the award-winning documentary A Plastic Ocean, the reality TV show Dragon's Den, a Las Vegas billboard, and countless news interviews. Thanks for being with us, Sean. And, you know, one thing that I want everyone to know is that our fundraiser project we're doing in partnership with Plastic Bank, and our goal is to remove over 1 million plastic bottles from the environment before it reaches the ocean. So thanks for coming and talking with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So my first question is, why don't you tell us a bit about Plastic Bank and how it came to be?
Plastic Bank was really created to almost solve a problem that you can explain through a metaphor that if you walked into the kitchen and the sink is overflowing and water is pouring all over the floor, and all you have is a bucket and a mop, what do you do first? And the answer is you turn off the tap. And when we started to look at ocean plastic and look at why is a garbage truck worth of plastic entering the ocean every single minute of every day, we realized that, you know, the world was just treating the ocean as such of a garbage dump. And there's a lot of awareness around the plastic problem, but it really hasn't been treated as a human problem. And when we look at it as a human problem, we can start to look at how do we turn off the tap. And that was really kind of that founding moment to start looking at a business solution to solve that problem.
So, like, when did you decide? This has been a problem for a while. When did you decide to embark on this journey?
Yeah, so my business partner and I, David Katz, started this about 5 years ago when David had the high-level idea that, you know, just that simple concept that if we could make plastic too valuable to enter the ocean, there has to be a business way to do it where we just need to reveal the value in plastic because, ironically, plastic's not garbage, it's not trash. Pound for pound, it's actually worth more than steel. It's just when people call it garbage, they treat it like garbage. When they see it as a disposable throwaway item, they're really not seeing it as that resource it is. And, you know, it was that paradigm, too, that 80% of the world's plastic comes from some of the most impoverished regions in the world, or I should say ocean plastic comes from those regions. And we just have this economic opportunity to mirror the problem of poverty, the problem of pollution, to actually become a solution where plastic can be a means for someone to ascend from poverty and not even be a lifelong plastic collector, let's really have that universal income where anyone can use plastic as a resource to provide education for their children, to fund a business. And this just became the inspiring way that, you know, we can find these localized solutions to really impact a global problem.
That's beautiful. I love the way that you've integrated it in with alleviating poverty in those areas. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so for us, you know, we've really looked at how do we legitimately create a social impact in these incredibly vulnerable areas. And really, when we look at plastic as a recycling system, when we treat it as a supply chain, quite often it's so easy to be blind to what's happening to the people at the very bottom of that supply chain. And when we started to look at how do we reveal the value in plastic, we realized that we really had to reveal the value in the people. So we're really the only world's first collector first model where it's not about just the plastic. It's really about putting that collector first and looking at how do we dignify someone who collects plastic anywhere in the world? How do we stabilize that person's dependability, the reliability on a consistent income? And how do we bring that dignity and stability, which is where we have our social plastic supply chain? So when someone knows that if you have to use a plastic product, it really should be the product that has the highest environmental impact, but also the highest social impact, where we're putting the collectors first in these regions and creating a dignified means of income, which really just becomes the way of the future as we're seeing more companies start to realize that, you know, blind supply chains are very dangerous. We're seeing a lot of consumers realizing that blind consumerism is very dangerous. But when we can have just a trusted, transparent, authentic supply chain of a social plastic, it really changes the paradigm on even our belief that we can create global closed-loop systems, that we can keep recycling what we're making instead of making new plastic every year, and we can do it in a way that's better for the people and better for the planet.
Yeah, I really like that, and I agree. I don't think I've ever seen where the collector is elevated above the plastic. So that I love that. I love that part of it. So one of the reasons that I wanted to do this summit was to actually have a real impact through something that is educational. So not only would we learn, but we would also do something. And I love the way that you guys are doing what you're doing and measuring it. It's measurable impact that you have. And what I want to know also, and I wanted all the speakers to share, is what was the key to taking that idea from just an idea that maybe others have had and then actually doing something about it rather than just saying, wow, there's a lot of plastic here, you know? I thought I was in an isolated – I don't know exactly what the story was, but I know that the plastic is going to places where there's no people. You know, the ocean carries it there. So what was the key to taking that and actually doing something about it for you?
You know, it almost starts with the simple fact that, you know, the oceans can't wait and the people can't wait who are involved in these programs. So once you have the paradigm that something became possible, like once it became something that we just believed – you know, could have enough legs to happen, it just really became the faster we could act, learn, and, you know, get feedback and just keep acting and, you know, fail our way forward, the faster we could figure it out. And I think one of the most powerful things is, you know, we started with no real experience in recycling, no real experience in poverty alleviation, and, you know, global transportation and the logistics. But we came from, you know, a sales and marketing background and a technology background of just, you know, the entrepreneur's mindset of, I don't have the answer to everything, but I'm committed to figuring it out. And really, once we understood that, you know, we didn't need all the answers to begin, we just needed to know what the next step was, is what really gave the confidence of, for both David Katz and myself to really just have the mentality. It's not even about, are we the people able to make this happen today? It's, are we committed to becoming the people who are able to make this happen and committed to becoming the company that's able to bring this to the world? And, you know, it really changes the paradigm of, you just need to be moving forward, learning, and the path will reveal itself is very different than needing every answer before you start, which to me is just the most important thing, to just always be moving.
Yeah, that's great. And like, so are you in a lot of different countries now? Where did you start?
Yeah, we're in Haiti. So Haiti was really the biggest starting point. We did learning projects in Colombia and Peru to really understand the needs of the people involved in these programs, learn what the pain points were, what was working, what wasn't. And that's where we really uncovered just the dignity, the stability, and that need to put a collector first and not treat them like a supply chain just became so evident. And at the same time, this was shortly after peak oil, about 3 or 4 years ago, when oil prices plummeted, which then made about 90% of the world's informal plastic recycling just disappear because the value became too low, even in the most vulnerable regions. And this is when we were introduced to Haiti, one of the most poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, where about 75% of people live on less than $2 a day. And this entire industry, just because of that price fluctuation, was about to go away. And there was just the opportunity to bring in what was a commodity-based market on a very small scale, what had was a bit of a charitable supported market. And this is also at the time when, you know, a 2010 earthquake devastated Haiti, but about 4 years later was the same time that most of those charities left the country. So most of that temporary aid was now leaving, and there's this catastrophic need that when we uncovered the option to really be at the heart of creating this program in such an area of need, we just put our full focus into figuring out this model in Haiti and really spending a couple of years of just learning from the people, learning from our own programs. We were the first to implement trading plastic for goods like solar-powered cell phone charging, cooking fuel, access to Wi-Fi, education, all things beyond just the monetary value of plastic. And now these programs are also being rolled out into the Philippines, Indonesia, Brazil, and will continue to expand into new countries throughout the year.
I went onto your Facebook page, and I saw a video of a drone flying over a stream bed, and I guess it was in the Philippines.
Oh, that was probably in Haiti in the Styrofoam Canal, yeah.
I mean, it keeps going and going and going, and it's just completely filled with plastic. And I found that very curious, and it just was like a river of plastic, and I was curious about that. You know, is it they don't have clean water, or why is there so much plastic? And what, you know, I mean, seeing that on your page, I thought, oh, they're going to go there. You know, as soon as those people realize it's not trash, there's going to be a change to this.
Yeah, and really when we look again at the systemic way that it happens in a lot of these countries, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is just, when someone lives in abject poverty, it is impossible to care about the oceans, to care about, you know, the broader country, to care about even the cleanliness of a community, when all you're trying to do is survive for the day, when all you're trying to do is just, you know, feed your family. Like, basic hierarchy of needs, if anyone is in a state of desperation, it is possible or impossible to really see beyond that. And it's this huge abundance of poverty in so many of these regions, which combined with, you know, almost non-existing waste management systems, which really just creates, you know, a culture of throwing things into the oceans and the waterways as a means of throwing it away. And really a lot of even just that education that there's another solution. So many of the countries even we go into and the areas we focus on, you know, there isn't government garbage trucks, there isn't these giant facilities. We have to create this organic collection system and really reveal the value to everybody. And also, again, we bring in a value beyond the basic price of plastic with social plastic. So we almost have to reintroduce, you know, the social plastic value, but where we go beyond just the collectors and even include the community, so that someone who brings in their plastic just so they can get some cooking fuel or food. They don't feel like a plastic collector, but they now understand the value in plastic, and they now see somebody collecting plastic very differently. And there's just so much of these root cause fundamental things to, you know, put in place before the true value of plastic, you know, is revealed to that community.
And so what are some of the goals that you have for Plastic Bank?
I mean, biggest goal is really to stop ocean plastic to be everywhere in the world where it's currently leaking into the plastic, and having the systems in place that no one would ever consider having it go into the water. And beyond that, our own programs are really designed that over time, people will stop getting them from the, you know, the rivers and the waterways and the communities, and be directly getting the plastic from businesses, from households. And really that systemic change, that it doesn't need to be a throwaway pickup culture as compared to a closed loop culture. So to really reveal that closed loop recycling can be a universal earned income for the world's poor. And even with our own programs, where we have a blockchain technology where we provide financial inclusion by giving digital savings to people without bank accounts, plastic collecting should just be seen as the cultural standard, you know, for any society. Insert how that, you know, impacts each unique region.
Yeah, that's great. So bringing it into this, like, so many practical uses for the actual collectors themselves. Because you've put the collectors first, now you've figured out exactly what they need. And sometimes money is just not, you know, even cash can be useless in certain places.
Yeah, it can be dangerous as well, which is why we continuously endeavor for this, you know, blockchain-based technology version of it, where someone can digitally save, they can transact, but all doing it without carrying cash around in very vulnerable areas. So again, one of those ways of how do we put the collector first is the ability to have savings, which is very unique, bring in financial literacy and education, but really that safety behind, you know, making it safe for someone to improve their livelihoods without increasing the danger.
So what if you, so a lot of people listening, they're thinking, maybe I should do that thing that I have been thinking about in the back of my mind, but always, you know, was thinking about something else first, my family or my job or, you know, my career or whatever it is. What would be your advice for would-be change makers who are going to take the leap into something passionate like you have? What would be your advice?
You know, I think it's almost a two-part advice. That one is, again, it's not whether you're able to do it today. It's whether you're committed to becoming the person capable of doing it. And when you look at the simple fact is it worth doing it? You know, I really look at, to me, it's so fulfilling to live a life of purpose where you continuously, you know, recognize the purpose in your actions. You live on purpose, for purpose. And when you look at even the, you know, the staying in a basic job and, you know, doing purpose as a side project, or when you can combine the two, you know, you really start to bring a lot of balance in your life. And, you know, I think a lot of people need to realize as well that, you know, it's not necessarily selfish to, you know, focus on your own purpose and beliefs, because when you're happy and you're fulfilled, you know, you really become a beacon for others to also become inspired, to become fulfilled. And, you know, it's a lot easier to have a positive influence on other people, you know, on your family, on your business, when you're really feeling aligned and working in, you know, something that truly does drive purpose for you. And I think there's this giant shift as well when someone can create a, you know, very recognized for-purpose business, that more people want to help, more people want to get involved, more people want to work for that business. And, you know, like any business to survive, more customers need to be supporting that business through their purchase power. And, you know, I truly believe that businesses once existed to, you know, where they could get by doing bad things. Now we're at the point where companies are really trying not to do bad, but we're really approaching this day where businesses are either existing to do good or ceasing to exist. And when consumers are now becoming more educated, more transparent, and supporting businesses with their purchase power, this is where it even just becomes a business best practice to challenge yourself to, you know, really create something with purpose, because this is what the world's starting to support. And this is a brand new era where you can get ahead of the time by taking the jump now as compared to trying to play catch up later.
Yeah. And I like that where you don't have to already know how it's going to happen, but to be the person that's going to figure it out, it's going to discover it and be committed enough to stick with it, you know, and have the vision to do that. So
sticking with it is definitely the hardest part.
Yeah, I know. Right? So, well, I am curious, what makes it sustainable for you?
So for us, it's always had to be a business model. Otherwise, again, it becomes a nice to do, a campaign, mm-hmm. a something that could bring awareness. But for us, you know, our business model is we work with a lot of the largest companies on the planet, where we set up these brand activations in these countries where, you know, it's not just setting up programs, it's setting up ongoing permanent root cause collection facilities. We're selling that plastic as social plastic to the brands. They know that in the prices that we do in our packages, in the plastic sales, that if they're not allowing our business to grow and thrive, then it will be temporary. So we built in that, you know, we're a social enterprise where it is a self-sustaining revenue model where our own revenue is what fuels our growth. And, you know, that's even important for our partners, because our partners need to invest in something that will always be there. Otherwise, it'll be seen as a campaign. So at the heart of the business, to be a self-sustaining revenue-generating company is how we control our speed of impact, which I think is so critical to the delivering on purpose.
Yeah. And it makes it so that you can actually afford to do it, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, working in your passion into a business model is a really smart way to go. So we're having a fundraiser, and our partner Project O is, which is Rich Gurman's organization, is sort of heading up this campaign, and we'll be collecting all the money. And then we're gonna. What one thing that Project O does is picks projects that are already doing stuff that is really good and then giving them money. So we decided already that Plastic Bank was going to receive all of the proceeds, all of the income after the merchant fees that come from our fundraiser. And so we've got two levels. You can donate at any level that you want, and know that your donation is going directly to assisting Plastic Bank to have their collectors removing that plastic and returning it into those companies that use plastic, so they don't have to make more plastic. If you are able to donate $35 or more, Sean and Plastic Bank has offered us plastic neutral status for a year. I'm going to have him explain that, which on their site is $44. But with a $35 donation or more, with a $35 donation or more, you'll get plastic neutral status for a year. And then we also have another level at $197. You can receive the Changing the World Toolkit, which has included the plastic neutral status plus programs from all of the speakers who are participating in the Changing the World Toolkit, from, you know, greening your business to using marketing to promote your charity to discovering your genius and becoming a change angel and many more. So, Sean, why don't you talk up to us about what does plastic neutral status mean and how good they can feel about their $35 or more donation?
Yeah, plastic neutrality is something that we've been introducing to our clients, to different product lines, but now really just bringing to the average person, where, You know, we even look at, as you, you know, really work to decrease your own global footprint, you know, even decrease your own plastic usage, there's a way that you can continuously be a part of extracting more plastic from the planet than you always use. So, you know, as we even look at different ways to, you know, be a consumer, a different way to live a lifestyle, we at least have this means where we have a direct distribution to impact these people in these regions where we can add a little bit more on top of the price of plastic, which often doubles the price that somebody earns from collecting plastic. So even where, you know, we're not using every single type of plastic, not selling every single type of plastic to date, but we have partners that can, and there's ways that that plastic can be fully recycled, reused. And again, when we have our own systems of buying social plastic, we can hand on these rewards. But through our plastic neutrality packages, we're able to increase the value that a collector has, deliver that collector first, and, you know, potentially even find these plastics that have such low value that are hard to collect, increase the incentive, and all of a sudden we start drastically increasing the livelihoods, increasing the recycling rates. And it's this combo of buying and selling social plastic, but also just putting these plastic neutrality packages on top of what communities are already earning is really how we, you know, fast track dignifying recycling. So when you as a person become plastic neutral, you have more plastic being extracted around the world while helping people's lives at the same time, while preventing it from ending up in the ocean, you know, as we all just work to being better stewards of the planet.
Yay. That is so multifaceted. I love it. It's like not only is there this direct relation, but it's on top of this, you know, these plastic neutral status. What do you call them? People are helping to even make that a faster process of the collectors being able to raise themselves up out of poverty. So with any donation over $35, you'll get that plastic neutral status from Plastic Bank and know that that's what you're contributing. And we will be sending out notices to everyone once the campaign, we're closing the campaign on October 31st, at least the first part of the campaign, so that we can collect all the monies donated and get them sorted and counted so that we can know exactly what impact we had. So everyone that contributes or participates will be able to know what it was that you actually impact that you had as a collective. So thanks, Sean. Do you have any final words for our listeners out there?
I guess final thing I'd leave with, especially just with the theme about, you know, really becoming a change maker, a change agent. You know, I've just seen enough of what I've seen in some of these large companies, what I've seen from the support we get, that it often can seem, you know, like a dreamer's thing to try to do a for-purpose project, a for-purpose business, or even, you know, try to convert your own company into a for-purpose entity. But, you know, I really do believe that humanity is changing. We are really starting to change the transparency in everything we do, the authentic nature that's required to be, you know, trusted to be in business for the long term. That I would really look at this as, you know, a long-term business model best practice to bring purpose into your life and purpose into, you know, your actions of profitability.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for doing this project. Thanks for dedicating your life to solving this problem that is fast becoming one of the most just important projects that for the environment. So thank you for dedicating yourself to it. We're going to do our best to raise a bunch of money for you, okay?
Perfect.
All right. Thank you, Sean.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Changing the World Summit, where inspiring leaders from around the world share their secrets on having more impact in these times of change. To participate in our project to remove over 1 million plastic bottles from the environment, please visit www.changingtheworldsummit.com now and make your contribution.